Interview with Ray Strong, Three Rivers, March 20th, 2006. Well, Ray, I've come to talk with you about art in Mill Valley in the 1940s and 50s.
Yes, in here.
And the reason I'm interested is because the old O'Hanlon place is an art center now, where Ann and Dick O'Hanlon lived.
Top Priest is the art center?
It's an art center. We call it O'Hanlon Center for the Arts.
You do?
Yes. And
It's in the same Maybeck building.
It's in the same building.
I thought that
But no, that's the outdoor art club you're thinking of. I'm thinking of the one on Throckmorton right below your old house.
Oh.
That place is an art center now. It's where Ann...
He always expected to go give it as a recreation for the University of California. That didn't go through.
They didn't leave it to the University of California.
How was it given to the city?
No, it was given to the organization that Ann started. Ann started an organization called Sight and Insight, which was about teaching perception and creativity. The importance of perception...
You know, the only thing I remember about her is that she had a big gong. She'd whack it. Agnes Oman went down there, and they were doing Sight and Insight, the spiritual sort of thing. She'd whang that thing and tap the whole Chinese landscape painters by implication.
And we still have that gong.
You do?
Yes. Yeah.
Terrific. Now, what's this for? Is it going to be a recording for the historical?
It's going to be a recording for the Mill Valley History Room.
Yeah.
And also for the O'Hanlon Center, because when we come to do the exhibition of art by artists like you in the 40s and 50s who were living in Mill Valley, then people will loan work and we'll show them in Dick O'Hanlon's old sculpture studio, which is now a beautiful gallery. And then the library will also do some work on histories of various artists who lived in Mill Valley at that time.
Who's the director of that now, you?
Well, I'm the president of the board now.
Good.
And I've been doing that. It's my third year. It was my idea to do this exhibition of artists in the 40s and 50s so that we could show you and Bart Perry and Dick Graveson and Ann and Dick O'Hanlon.
Are you going to put this on?
Yes.
When?
Either the end of this year or the beginning of next year.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. Might be in December or November of this year if we can get it together.
A lot of fun.
So you are the first person to interview, and to me...
Well, I'm honored.
Well, I'm so glad to be here. So let's talk about art in Mill Valley and what your art in Mill Valley, but also the artists you knew.
And so we'll just go down. Fine, yeah.
Okay. So let's start with what made you and Betty decide to move to Mill Valley. Why was that a good place for you to live at that time?
Well, it was a very simple thing. I worked for about 4 or 5 years in Liberty ships and Victory ships, and every time we'd go across the ferry at that time, the bridge hadn't been built, and I'd always see Mount Tamalpais, and we lived in what was called a backyard in Cottage Avenue in Berkeley, and as we go up to Inverness back and forth, I said, let's go and see what we can find, see if we can, instead of living in Berkeley, I'd like to be closer to the landscapes. And so we came over and looked on through, but the prices on the houses down on the flat by the school is and the tennis courts, out of our things. But about the same time, a couple of weeks later, I was over getting some things at the Flags on Montgomery Street, and who was there but Graveson's wife. She says, Ray, I hear you've been over trying to find a place. You know what? And I said, what's what? She said, the Gravesons have had illness. They need a couple thousand dollars. And for less than $2,000, $1,800, so you can buy the whole Lovell Avenue, an acre or more. And I said, I'll take a look, but I'll make out a check right now, because I had some of the money from doing those 6 back rents for the university in 38, you see. So that same day, that's why we...
You bought
my dad came down, not my brother, He needed a little work of some drawers in the kitchen, but my father came down and stayed at the Chestnut House, and we lived, Buddy and I, in the lower level of the Chestnut House, and back and forth every day. Dad had a regular outfit for surveyors use, and he laid out the foundations and watched the bulldozer. And he loved painting, loved carpentry work, and it was the closest association because he helped my brother build his house in Berkeley. He could do plumbing and the whole damn thing. Mm. Wonderful man. Yeah.
And you said the Chestnut's house. Is that Tom Chestnut where your father stayed at the Chestnut's?
No, the two kids, both of them played the Prince horn. They were down in their own little place right below. We stayed in the lower level. I remember Tim had a case of intussusception, and Dr. Wolf came over and put him on a homeopathic thing and quickly got rid of it. So we met Dr. Wolf, and Betty played quartets with her.
With Joan.
Carol was a housewives quartet. Mm, mm. There were good days.
And did you... So you came, and you already had friends there in Mill Valley. You knew the Gravesons. You knew the Chestnuts.
Yeah, they were down here. Well, here we are. What's the memory of the artist? Well, Lucian Block, the painter, the Omans bought one of her redwoods in the fog, a very great, big, gorgeous thing. And I met her. And about that time, early on, the ladies, international garments workers, had a troupe of mostly Jewish girls, and they had a song, something about get rid of this sex and the ginks and the company things and form your unions, and they came up in our living room and we all sang that song. We all knew it by heart. And she was very much left. Her father, as I remember, was an open member of the Communist Party. I don't think Lucian was. And I certainly only was in for about 3 months and then dropped it because I was the education director of the Consumer Cooperative Movement for Northern California and couldn't mix them. But Bups attended a cell, and she also, when we moved to, when we were in Berkeley, she, even though the loyalty oath was up, she still was in a cell over there. She read the whole darn books on Trotsky's trial, and she was very left-wing, Bops was. She was very much so because her father was very active, a leftist from Sanford. There were great days, and she was right at the meetings, and we had originally had met your father and Caroline with a fellow who was way up in the self-help movement, and it was a study group at his, I forget his name, and that's where we got acquainted with both Lou and Caroline, because we were there as participants in this study group. But I have a hunch what it was, is a kind of a recruiting thing with bimbas of the history of the working class, where people would go further left from that orientation. That's just in hindsight, but it was an interesting group, and we became very close friends, particularly with Caroline. She was head of the IWCA, would often come over to the former Adams Danish Gallery, which was the Artists' Gallery, the Art Students League, and the artist-owned art, retail store, and it was all associated. I did murals and stuff. Some of them are posters for the whole National Cooperative Movement. I was very active in that. So I think that covers that. Steve Dimitrov, I became acquainted with because he did framing for me like nobody ever else had done before.
What made it special?
I didn't know his work as a painter. I think it was one or two kind of nocturne sort of things. When he moved up to Anchor Bay, and I think you had a house there for a while too, I stopped in there and I was doing a great big vertical thing for the Sunset Magazine, and he helped me stretch it, big long canvas.
Well, tell me, what made his framing special? You said he framed your pictures like nobody else.
Well, the framing was special because, as I remember, not only was the natural wood held, no gold, but there were linen liners often that set, particularly for my landscape paintings. I wonder if I have any of those frames left. They were beautifully made. They had a little place, you know, just down up close to that warehouse where the Doc Martin where it takes off, yes.
Right across, right next to the Bank of America. They're right across from the Mill Valley Market and the near the Bank of America.
Yeah.
Well, he had worked with Steve and Lucien had both done plastering for Diego Rivera when he did his murals in San Francisco. I know.
Yeah. He bought one of my first paintings, a little 8x10, and it was just barbed wire and those little wind-blown trees, you know, that go along, and it's impaled, and the foreground is just dry grass and the sky and this one little, what do you call those?
Cheesecloth.
What?
A kind of a cloth. Something that was impaled on the fence.
Yeah.
Was it a piece of a cloth or was it something?
No, it's a little plant.
Oh, a plant.
Oh, I'm guessing. They're all over the whole western dry landscapes.
Like a tumbleweed?
A which?
A tumbleweed.
Well, it's the same thing as a tumbleweed, yeah. Mm. It is a tumbleweed.
And Steve Dimitrov bought that from
me. I saw it later up at Anchor Bay. He had it in his little place where he did his framing up there. I remember also that on the post going down the hill were 1 gallon empty jug after another parties, which they'd given over a period of time.
Up in Anchor Bay. Yeah. Okay, let's continue down the list. Let's see. Stephen, how about Bart Perry? What do you remember about Bart?
Oh, the next is Bart Perry. Well, Bart Perry, like myself, for income, we both worked as on building as carpenters. And as a painter, I'm trying to remember what Bart Perry did, but I think he had tried to go modern and was painting kind of hard-edged, semi-flat cubist things. I thought he was just trying to go with what was 15 years later from the New York bunch of painters. Most of them went quite modern, semi-abstract. But I liked him as a fellow carpenter, and we became quite good friends. And I think Bart loaned me his great Steinway grand piano, and for a long time it was in our living room. He was going over to go to an island off of Spain, Morocco or someplace, and I never, outside of picking up the piano later, I lost contact with him. I guess he's now since long gone, yes. But I liked him, and I liked what he did.
He did do some landscapes because my parents bought one.
I don't remember his landscapes. Were they any quite good?
He loved to do trees. He has he did one landscape with it looks like Mill Valley, a house partially showing,
but
mostly
I think they were quite good.
Yeah, they were nice.
They were with
bright saturated colors.
They were realism, but quite disciplined. Mm-hmm. Yes, all right. Dick Grayson's next. I'm ashamed to say that I don't have any recollection at all of a single painting of Grayson. I just can't. What were they like?
Well, we had one, yeah. which I still have.
Oh, I do see. I saw one. Caroline had one of a bunch around Thanksgiving, and a very nice figurative kind of Winslow Homer thing, but done with the decorative. That was a good job. The figures are alive, and the theme was fine. That was a nice painting.
And I've never seen anything more about him. What can you tell me about Dick Grayson? Do you know anything about him, where he was from, or what kind of a person he was?
They were responsible for us moving to Mill Valley, as I told you.
And where? If you knew him, where had you met him?
What?
Where did you first meet Dick Grayson? Do you remember? Was it in Berkeley, or?
It was. I didn't meet him until after we'd started the building. In fact, O'Han and I didn't meet until the building. He came up one day with his camera and took a picture of Dad and myself. I have that someplace, of my cutting with the big old part of the flooring of my house I was building. And so that's how I met O'Hanlon, because he was very pleased that I was going to be a neighbor up the hill. There was a question about O'Hanlon as an activist or something in here someplace. Handle any projects.
Oh yes, they did have friends come down and help build Dick's sculpture studio. I have a photograph of that.
There is an incident. I participated with O'Hanlon's building his great big barn studio, and Perry ran up and said, "Come on down, Ray. They're pouring concrete, 9-foot wall, and we've got to get 10 tuba floors. Well, it's going to collapse." And so I went down and we put tuba floors to preserve that 9-foot wall before I put any more concrete in it. And that was my real meeting with Dick O'Hanlon. So we saved the wall. Well, the question here, did artists, musicians, and writers socialize in Mill Valley? Well, I don't remember except one meeting put on by your mother and father, in which some very left-wing Negro people were there. And it was a big, long table, a block or so off of Reed. There was a big grocery store there. But anyhow, the big, long table, and it definitely was a social meeting, in some way, honoring these Negro leftists. And that's about the only time that I had a association of numbers of people. And it was in honor of one or two of these activists in the union movement, I guess. But the artists, musicians, and writers. You know, I suppose that they did socialize, but outside of that one big table, and that I think was put on by Caroline, as a hostess, that's the only time. I don't remember musicians and writers.
Except
your father was.
Well, Betty and Joan Wolfe and Carol. Betty and Joan Wolfe and Carol Fowler played in a quartet. Can you remember anything about those musicals?
They called it the Housewives Quartet.
The Housewives Quartet.
Yes. Very active. The Wolfe's wife played the second fiddle, I think it was. No, the second fiddle was Carroll. I think his... No, the cello was the wife of a baseball player. I can't remember her name. They not only became so well known that sometimes they'd go all the way down to Stanford to the Duvenex and play quartets. They became quite famous. They were called the quartet named after a concrete highway, El Camino Quartet.
Oh, they changed.
Yeah, that's a nice bit.
Yeah,
Bumps loved it. And I went along to. They played at Stanford with the Ross Quartet, an octet, Mendelssohn. Packed house in the theater at Stanford. Put that down.
Mm.
Yes, it's about Betty. The next one is, how did Ray respond to the McCarthy witch hunts? Artist Mill Valley, question mark, become activist against McCarthy and his ilk? Not in any organized form that I can remember, but I do remember that the John Birch Society raised a holy stink when the man who left his wife and married Pulnero, his secretary, Overstreet, came to town, and there was quite a furor downtown. It wasn't a riot, but there was a big Birch's mix-up, if you remember at the time. Yeah. Well, Overstreet spoke just the same. And Bonero was a good, she's a very handsome female leftist. I admired her.
I didn't know that I didn't realize Harry Overstreet left Bonaro for his secretary, or was Bonaro the secretary?
I think originally he gave talks to the universities across the country, and I just vaguely kind of think that in some way, as his secretary, she went along on some of those trips, and I don't know if it was in the running the recorder to get it down in reproduction or what, but I knew the his first wife, because she had a house above the big place where all the football games were played. She was on that little seat. Ed would put a 4x4, we'd all get on the roof and watch the football games. And I thought she was a very motherly, nice person. I liked her. And I didn't like the shift of him going for a younger wife. I'd painted a little thing of up in the square dance in the Adirondacks. At that time, they were associated with a university, kind of a country-sized place where they had vacations. And she bought that.
Now, was that Bonaro who bought that? Bonaro bought that.
Well, I suppose McCarthy was about as close as we ever got to a neo-fascist sort of germinal sort of thing. As far as I knew it, it never did take hold to any extent. I don't know what the history of the McCarthy's pulling in liberals. He knocked out several of them from very well-paying jobs because of his rantings, but outside of that, I don't know whatever McCarthy accomplished. He stuck to high heavens, as far as I'm concerned. And number 10 is, what was Ray's attitude towards selling his art?
I asked you that because you always sold your art for very little money, and I wonder, and I know that money doesn't matter so much to you, but you must have had to sell in order to help support the family. So that's why I asked, what were your feelings about selling your art?
You know, I think it's in the dashboard of the car is a list of paintings, 25, 35, the highest is $75. I'll have to dig it out for you just to show you how people responded at those prices for what was in the paintings.
Yes.
Yes.
I'd love to see it.
The only gallery I had was a fellow on Sutter Street, and he upped the price a little on it, sold a few. Somehow I had my carpenter's union card. I really supported raising the kids and building my house. Not on my paintings, but as a union paying carpenter, Chestnut, who's very active, sponsored my becoming a union member, and very friendly with both him and his son.
Was it the son was the sponsor for your becoming a union member? Tom Chestnut, who was about your age, or was it his father?
Father.
The father.
Yeah. Tom, outside of his playing the French horn, his wife also, and Betty for a while, went in as a violinist under a guy that was imitating the great Italian fellow from New York.
An Italian horn player, you mean? An Italian horn player? A French horn player? Or who
I don't get that. What's that, sir?
A horn player? Who were they imitating in New York? Who was the guy in New York?
Oh, let me see if I can remember. He dressed, looked alike.
Was he a musician? A musician?
Yeah.
He was a musician.
Yeah. Mm.
Doesn't matter. How about, let me ask a question which is not on your list. Do you remember Sam Newsom, and did you ever see his paintings?
I remember Sam very well. Number one, when O'Hanlon was building his big barn studio, he did a great big thing, drawing of a big rock. And he said, let rocks, there something, what was that phrase? Let rocks, something, let rocks speak anyhow. It was a celebration of the enormity of the big studio that O'Hanlon was building. It was kind of a tongue-in-the-cheek. He had his own little house and all those tremendous collections of little dwarf plants that had been to Japan and had written a book on.
The bonsai.
Yeah, the bonsais.
Did you know he was a painter?
Yes, but I can't remember a single painting of his. That's the damnedest thing.
Well, he had a studio on the O'Hanlon property for a little while in the old brick building at the bottom of the driveway.
Yeah.
And he painted, I would almost call them naive, visionary kinds of paintings with very bright colors and very naive technique,
Yeah. But
very imaginative. And he also painted completely different work, which was Japanese-style brushwork.
Ah. I do remember now, he made a trip to New Hampshire and did one theme, Brooks. And a very oriental line drawings, black and white, of a little stream and a rock here, a little stuff rooted here. Yes, they were very handsome.
Mm.
Yeah. And he had written a book on, I don't know how many years he was over in Japan, but it was a matter of, it was a couple of years. He's got long since gone. Yeah.
But his daughter lives in Mill Valley in the old house.
Oh, really?
Yes.
She's still alive?
Oh, his daughter.
Yeah.
She's young. She's in her 50s.
Oh.
And she and her husband live in the Newsom's house. Her name is Sylvia. But
oh, nice.
Her nickname is Chips.
Yeah. I met for the first time George Wheelwright there.
Ah.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Can you remember meeting George for the first time?
Well, I met him there the first time. We immediately such close friends. It was only a matter of a week or so that he had the minister and his wife and Betty and myself and a couple of others down for a wonderful beef dinner at the Wheel Rock place on the ranch. And of course he had those bulls flown over by airplane. He really upped the grade of his Herefords. He really had an eye for going top on the raising of cattle. I think they gave the land, or maybe even the whole darn ranch, to the Buddhists. His wife was very much Buddhist in her philosophy, as I remember. They didn't try to convert me at all, but I always admired making themselves home in the universe out of idea. Yep.
Do you remember Dory Bassett?
Who?
Do you remember Dory Bassett, Dory and Chuck Bassett?
I didn't get that yet.
Dory and Chuck Bassett. He was an architect. They lived on Lovell and Cornelia.
Oh.
Let's see. Here.
Chuck Bassett. No, I don't remember him at all. He was an architect. Was he associated with the fellow that designed the library? His name is in here.
Don Emmons.
Yeah. I met him briefly, but just very briefly. Bassett, no, I don't. Perkle Jones, yes, I've already. I helped when he wanted to leave his Sunset house in Sunset, came over and was looking for land. He got in touch with me and I took him up and showed him that place where he built his house for himself and his wife.
It's an amazing place.
Oh, yes.
Beautiful.
The walk down to it itself is poetry.
Yes.
Yes.
Poetry.
Ruth Marion Baruch. Wasn't that his wife?
Yes.
Yeah. She was socially a photographer with a social conscience. Yes. Yeah, I saw her photographs there and met her. Number six, why did Ray and Betty decide to leave Mill Valley for Santa Barbara? No, very simple reason. We had gone on a trip to Europe and we were in a place called Fréjus in the south of France on our way to Morocco where I was going to make drawings and spend a number of months there because I'd heard from Bart Perry how wonderful a place it was. But a dam broke, my car was destroyed, and we didn't have any desire to go any further and be a tourist painter, so we came home. And the only reason we left Mill Valley for Santa Barbara was when we got back, I was unemployed, and people, Senator Phil said, Ray, there's a man up here looking for you. And I said, what was his name? Oh, Vanderhoof, I think. And he's got a big grant from the Fleischmann and he wants you to do some murals of dioramas of the birds in Santa Barbara. You better get in touch with him because he's very anxious because he's well endowed and he wants you to paint them. So that's why we left.
You left to go to live in Santa Barbara to paint the murals. How long did it take you?
I thought I could do them in a year. I bid them under contract $1,000 each. The third year, the head of the Mural Society of America came in one day in front of one of the big murals at Oso Marsh with the birds and stuff, great big volcanic stuff. And the woman from the Mural Society says, "What are they paying you for these?" "Ray." And I said, "Well, I contracted $1,000 a piece for them." And she says, "Well, they're worth a lot more than that. Only $1,000 a piece." I said, "Well, the next day, the director, the woman director at the time, came in another check for $9,000, which doubled the price because they knew what they were getting. So that's a nice story."
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, you had done the dioramas. You had done a diorama over at the California Academy of Sciences in their African Hall, I believe.
Well, the reason I got the job was earlier I had done a mural of the Greater Kudu. Oh. And Cecil Tose did the daxidermy. He thought it was his master thing, 16 feet high. And at the time, for the paleontology background stuff, somehow Vanderhoof from the University of California was advisor on that, or was it the sixth that I did for 1939 World's Fair? He was also in charge of the paleontology geology for that. Anyhow, they had these murals to do, and he was then the director at Santa Barbara. And so, as I say, I got the contract and set my price double what I got, $500 for the kudu. They added $250 because they were so pleased with it. And so then they doubled it. I guess that's about the size of it. So what else we got here? Well, how does Santa Barbara compare with Mill Valley, the place for artists to live and work? As far as I'm concerned, there's no comparison. Mill Valley, Fox and Canyon, Muir Beach, north of the Golden Gate for the seascape, above all Point Reyes, nice little seashore, and the feminine landscapes, the rolling hills of western Marin. My God, if I've ever amounted to anything as an artist in California, Mill Valley was what it, to live and be accessible. Santa Barbara's a tourist town. Plenty of artists. We've had some great ones in there, but I would very quickly in Santa Barbara leave the town and head over the hills and get to the back country. And to do the dioramas, I'd go out and live with the landscapes and do the little scale models first, and then go right directly and do really, well, I did the whole San Andreas fault line for the ones of the migrating crane, and it was better than going to any art school in the world to go directly to nature and paint them for the birds. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for you coming, Addie.
Well, I have, let's see now. Let me ask you about your classes with children in Mill Valley. Tell me a little bit about what you did with kids like me when you took children out to paint.
Well, you know who my star student was? Well, it was a little girl named Abby Wasserman, and we were down about a half a mile or so. It was spring, and the willows, believe it or not, they were just beginning to burst the little green things atop. But as I came up, and you were about to lay it in. And I said, yeah, lay it in with that cadmium red light. I said, there's fire in that willow. You put the fire. Do you remember?
I remember. We were down near Muir Beach. We were in the valley between Muir Beach and Muir Woods.
Yeah. Well, that was my children's class, and you were the apple of my eye. And then later there was a weekend group that would come on Saturdays. There was a man who did the layouts and topography in San Francisco, and there's a couple of others, some of the upper crust lady artists from a WASP background in that group.
Let's see, Charlotte Freeman was in your group. Charlotte Freeman was one of your group.
Yes, she was a bit among the best.
She was a good painter. I remember seeing one of hers that I was very impressed with.
She came in and took a room at Muir Beach when I was over there helping take the dirt out from under a house so they could have an extra apartment. And she lived for a while, for a month, and painted out from there on the coast. She was a good friend and a very good painter. Yes. She's also gone by now, probably, yes.
You know, I think Charlotte may still be alive. I think she lives on the East Coast. I haven't heard that she passed away.
Yeah. Well, I met Dimitrov really the first time up at her house. Yeah, we were guests one night.
It's interesting to me how you met these various people, because it seems that there was a large circle of people in the arts and also politically active, and this is where most of your friends came from, that group, like an extended family almost. You met the Dimitrovs through Charlotte and Norman. You met O'Hanlon when he came up while you were building.
Oh, yeah.
No, this is... Because Mill Valley can be a place where people are just living in their own little world.
The thing that really made both myself and Bops kind of an enlarged family was Ross Valley Fair. There was a woman, Livermore, her son, I think, was in the state government. And somewhere, there was $8,000 granted to the Ross Valley Annual Fair, and somehow, because of my teaching both life and landscape at the College of Marin, she got in touch with me and said, to Mary Summers. Mary Summers was doing the possible roads and development, anti-development, to keep a big major highway of throwing cracker box houses all over West Marin. And somehow they thought they should have me do an exhibit called Man and Nature in Marin. And for that purpose, to tell the story, I went to Perkle Jones and saw Ansel Adam, and Perkle enlarged the photographs, and Ansel did the seashore, the oaks and grasslands, the marshlands, and did enlarged things for the Ross Valley. And my friend, a student of Ansel's from Berkeley, had a thing called Words of the Earth, and there were photographs of the brooks and the high Sierras, and they're all beautifully framed, and that was part of that exhibit.
That was Cedric Wright.
Not really. I think in a way, was instrumental because the botany teacher at San Francisco State hired an airplane, and under the funds, I funded it and photographed everything from the air. And that was a terrific exhibit. I think the following year they had Focus on Marin, which I was the father of too, and that was taking a commuter to San Francisco, a school teacher, and other professions, and photographing their operations, and that made a follow-up exhibit. They both should have been made into coffee table books. I don't think they were. No.
You were talking about Words of the Earth, and that is a book of photographs by Cedric Wright. Is that the artist you were talking, the photographer you were talking about, Cedric Wright?
I was so excited about that when the Board of Supervisors sent me to get Frank Lloyd Wright to design a museum of ecology for the
Go ahead.
College.
Talk, yeah. A museum of ecology for the college.
So that trip was a very wonderful trip. When we arrived in Kansas City,
Lloyd Wright once more.
No. Well, the trip was funded with a couple hundred dollars to fly me plus this student who had seen my floor plan for the story of ecology, science, and the service of man for the Palo Alto Museum. And he managed to sell the Board of Trustees of the museum to see if we couldn't get Frank Lloyd Wright, because I suggested, well, if you're going to do the museum for the college, let's get the best architect in the country. So that's where we had landed in Kansas City, and the war had broken out in Korea. So when we arrived, and we had a little floor plan of the different kinds of exhibits for the evolutionary story, and Mr. Wright's comment was, well, sure, I'd be very happy to design it, but you won't be able to get the funds to do it because the war has broken out, and unless there's going to be funds, well, I won't do any designing for it. So that ended that.
But he told you should be an architect.
Well, the conversation, of course, when I was introduced to him by a little secretary that I slept that night down where the little grade school was, where he'd gone to school when he was a boy. And when I came up and was introduced to him, I was introduced as Ray Strong, and the conversation was, oh, Strong Light! And his eyes tinkled, and he says, what do you do? And I said, oh, I try to paint landscapes. And then he said, well, do you know what my name means? And I said, no. And he says, it means maker. Why don't you become an architect and do the real thing? And I said, well, that's all right, except I like the change of the seasons, and I just want to be a good landscape painter. And he just threw his hands up and much say, well, that's that. But he said, make yourself at home. My students, a lot of them pay $1,500 a year, but you be my guest while you're here. And down below that big carrot, which is a big thing, in which it went up several stories high, and just a carrot. And the story of that, of course, I found from the students was, he designed a building a mile high out of Chicago, in which he rooted it so down deep that you could go a mile high with use of steel and elevators. Well, that's that part of the story. And I went out, and they would pitch up the harvest, it was August, of wheat, and I would stack it on, and I would help pick chickens for the Sunday meal. Every Sunday there was a big do. The guy that was from the designed that falling water, wealthy man of his great piece of architecture, showed up, and I remember they asked me to make some remarks, and I said, oh no, let's have the fellow with Falling Waters take my time, so senior student, and he said, "You are a horse's ass. Why didn't you say something, Ray?" I said, "Was that pun thing? Hell no, I wasn't going to make a fool of myself."
Tell me some of the things you remember about life in Mill Valley. Any kind of little stories about daily life in Mill Valley when you were living there. Where did you shop? Where did you buy your food? How did you spend, you know, your time? How did you go to the library? Little things like that.
No.
Where did you buy your gas, your gasoline?
We bought it from the Associated store because I was on the committee of a forward pass from Santa Barbara, the editor of the Mill Valley Daily, or whatever it was called, wanted to get rid of all the telephone poles in town and put all the utilities underground. It's one of his little Don Quixote jobs that he was on. And so when I was on that committee, the Associated Station was freshly built, or being built, and the matter came up to the committee, and I spoke up at the committee, and I said, "Well, don't let them build the darn thing unless they would completely enclose the metal sort of thing and put some brick something down to earth on around it." They did. They got them to do it. Well, I, because of other jobs that came up, I got Perkel to take and be appointed for my place, so he took over a member of that architectural committee. There was one particular fellow, I can't remember his name, he went clean up to the state on aesthetic matters. Don't remember his name.
So where was the...
Betty did all of her shopping at the... It was called the Green Frog, I think, at that time. It was just next to the parking where the City Hall was.
Was that, that's the store, that place is now the Mill Valley Market.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Canapa's place.
Was it really called the Green Frog?
Possibly. I have to check.
I think it was. That's because right behind it, there were frogs in the little Mill Valley stream, run right behind it. I used to go down there and have my lunch, talk to the frogs. They croaked a little.
How about the library? Did you use the Mill Valley Library?
Very little, when it was all those steps to go to it. Bops would pick up a book or two now and then, but when they moved to the other location, designed by Lemons and Associates, I thought that was the most wonderful thing to happen to Marin County, its location and the design. I'd hoped that someday they might give me a second go there. I had one little show of small sketches down in the basement, but the library itself had built a larger gallery on a lower level, and I would love sometime, and before I die, they would say, "Come on back, Ray, and put up a Marin County bunch of your paintings if you can get your hands on them." I would love to come back again.
What kind?
The train from the ferry boats, the Mount Tamalpais, was kind of Louis Persinger, the head of the first violinist, San Francisco Symphony more than one weekend would come over just to climb the mountain. And that was true of numbers of visiting musicians and artists. Mill Valley plus the starting point to get to climb the mountain. I never got to a single one of the operas up on top of the maiden supposed to be inside of the mountain.
Did you?
The Mopalopalos.
Did you go to the mountain play?
I never made the mountain play. Have you gone to it? Was it quite a play?
Quite wonderful. Yeah.
Costumes? Is the maiden in there?
Well, I never went. I can't remember one about Timalpa, the maiden, but I have seen other productions there. They do one every year. Now it's always a musical, but when I was a girl, it was a play. Sometimes an Irish play, sometimes an English play or an American play.
Yeah.
They change off every year now.
I'm ashamed to say I never even hiked down to see what the seating was like.
That's too bad. When you hiked in Mill Valley, when you went out to paint, would you go by yourself or would you go with a friend to do plein air painting?
That's a good question. Except for the Saturday group, when there's two or three people, a couple came over, as I said earlier, the fellow who did topography for the newspapers of San Francisco, and there's one or two of the women painters, including the Jean Botkin, he was quite talented, and Charlotte Freeman. That's about it, mostly by myself.
Would you go out for the entire day with a lunch? How did you do it? What time would you leave in the morning and go? Or would you take photographs and bring them back to the studio?
Both. Out of Mill Valley, except for not so much in the morning, but the afternoon light, a woman called Garvey, her husband's a boat builder. They just sent me a great big 37 boat he just finished. She has one, but I painted a big rock outcrop with oaks and stuff on top, right above Muir Woods. Best painting I think I ever did in Marin County. Most of the time, I'd go up for the weekend to the Betty's father built a cabin up on Mount Vision, and I'd not only stay overnight, but often I would get up before dawn out painting, almost always by myself. Yeah.
You were saying about the light in Mill Valley. What are the characteristics of the light in Mill Valley? What is the light like? What color is the light? When is the light most beautiful in Mill Valley?
Well, that's an easy answer. Afternoon, late. The reason's very simple. I won commission from the Art and Garden Center for $750. That's a hell of a good price at that stage of my life. I painted it from the parking lot of Safeway store in the high school. But in the afternoon, the shadows reveal the form of the mountains, the bulk and the thrust of the mountain. In the afternoon light, the shadows. But the foreground, I went over behind a police building on the point of the marsh, and there in behind is a rock outcrop, and it has a great big buildup of rocks repeating the Stinson thrust of the mountain and the fall off. And I made that the foreground, and that's the painting that's now hung in the Art and Garden Center. I'm very proud of that job. Not only that I did it, but I like the fact that I created the foreground to talk to the mountain.
Yes, It is a beautiful painting.
Yes, it is. I don't do many of that really guts quality.
Oh, I don't know if I agree with you.
All right.
I think some of your Santa Barbara, your mountains paintings are, they're so strong, so powerful. The ones of the mountains in the Santa Barbara area are also wonderful. There's a more feminine quality of Marin County, but a more masculine quality in the Santa Barbara Mountains, don't you think?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the femininity of the Marin landscape? I know you feel it very strongly.
Down where I am, an old people's combination of hospital and old people's where I am fed. Barbara brings me up here to the North Fork, which is heaven on earth. But there was a painting which, in describing it once, I did it for the 8th grade over San Francisco. College. And a bunch of little kids were in front. And the senior citizens, students and people who were all modernists attended it.
Yes.
And as I worked on it, I said to the little kids in front, you know, this is really, these forms, I'm really painting my wife. It's her breast and her body, buttocks and all. It's a portrait of my wife to the feminine hills. And one little girl said, yeah, but what did you, did all that broken color in the sky? Why did you break that up? And I said, well, the idea was I was painting the point rays cold fog vibration of a cooler value against the heat of the afternoon, and I wanted to do that. She says, well, it doesn't work, does it? And I said, no, you're right. I grabbed a big hot brush, made it simple like the rest of the paintings.
There is one artist I didn't ask you about, Mama Gravander. Do you remember Mama Gravander?
Very well. Every 16th of December, all the artists, writers in town came up to Mama Gravander's. It was a celebration. She managed every year to get a 16-year-old, about that age, girl. Very simple, feminine, young woman's dress. It was a celebration of some kind of a Swedish celebration of the birth of the new year, actually. The new year of this celebration is December 16th. It's the beginning of spring. And she put that on, and she had little biscuits and stuff. Some of it was quite crisp. Everybody came to it. And she was always dressed up in kind of a Swedish outfit, I think it was. It was kind of homespun, very handsome. She was a very impressive, sculpturally built lady.
Do you remember her husband? Her husband was a weaver also.
I don't remember a single thing about him. It was because I kind of liked the idea she was the virgin weaver. I don't know why, but I never even remember him at all.
That she was the virgin, that she was what?
I said I like to imagine her as a virgin.
As a virgin?
I mean, kind of a statuesque woman. I didn't connect her at all being sexual.
Huh.
She was above that. A goddess, no less.
A goddess.
She carried all that stuff away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did you get to know her quite well?
When I was a little girl.
Yeah.
Yes, she was very impressive.
Incidentally, this is completely off the record, but there was some time, a fracas between your mother and your...
Yeah, that would do it. So, let's see. What do you remember about... what do you remember about Gordon and Marjorie Foster?
I do remember going to Marjorie Foster's.
And Gordon, as a friend. I know Gordon was a close friend of yours.
What, who is?
Gordon, the minister. The minister at the community church.
Well,
Gordon Foster.
Did she become a minister?
No.
No. Oh, Foster, the minister. Oh, I knew him, yes. Oh, Gordon. Yeah, I gave him a picture of that I painted when he was quite ill. And he thanked me with tears in his eyes when I visited him to see it afterwards. I gave him two, and it was of El Capitan.
Mm.
And he says, you know, when that came to the hospital, I said, God, I'm going to get well. I mean, he caught the symbolism of it.
Yeah.
Yes, I loved Gordon. I remember his baptism service when little kids were brought. It was pure poetry. What he, his gesture, what he said, it's very simple, of the responsibility of the parenthood and the child right there.
Mm.
Beautiful.
He was a great man.
He was a great man. Betty thought so. I did too.
Mm.
Yeah. She, at one period, she came to my night classes. Somehow, as she was there, she had a little photograph of the heart of a city destroyed from Rotterdam. In fact, I think she even had a little replica. The next day, I took a big bunch of nice reddish clay and put it in her mailbox. She thanked me later. I don't know what she did with it, but it was, well, why don't you do your own sculpture? Yeah.
Hmm.
Yes.
I think, how did you help other people practice their own creativity, do something in the arts that maybe they hadn't thought they could do? I remember you as a person who would encourage other people.
Yeah. Well, you know, cheerful optimist Ray, strong light Ray. The simplest thing in the world is when I met somebody, I would say immediately, I want to see what you do. And then they would oblige and come by with their sketchbooks or painting or two. Just the art spirit of the fusion of putting what's in your mind, where all paintings are seen as finished things before you make a single stroke. The fusion just takes place like that. It's just natural.
What makes you such an optimist and a lover of life? Why do you have this incredible spirit in your heart and in your mind?
I was asked that at the University of California, Santa Barbara. A whole bunch of students that shown a bunch of my slides. And the question of the MC said, well, what is it? No, it's very simple. Better than skim milk, top cream, and rolled oats. That's it. Well, that's a boy. That was the breakfast. The whole class laughed.
and accepted it as a fact, which it was.
Had a contralto singing mother when she believed in raising the kids. And when we moved the farm, there were three cows. One of them was a Guernsey, the other was a Jersey Guernsey. And did we have top cream?
So you were raised on top cream. You weren't raised on skim milk.
No. You know, that it's a very wonderful thing, because when I was in the Adirondacks painting, we made a trip one day to visiting farms around. We got to one farm, and a little girl, she's all kind of dark-haired and bony, and I offered to give her, it was a sketch of mine. I had little sketches along with me, so I offered it to her, and her mother said, well, before you accept it, you'll have to get your father's approval to accept it. She took off and came back grinning. He said, yes! And I said to Bops in the car with me, do you know that's a skim milk child? For the dollars and cents of selling his fat stuff for money, he's deprived his own kid of cream and her feeding. Look here, it's a kind of a minor tragedy. For the love of money, he has done that. The evidence of the child. And Bob says, yes, that's an observation, but aren't you kind of reading things? And she says, oh no, there it is. Well, she says, I guess you're right.
Tell me, how did Betty help you with your own life in art? What was the role that your wife played in your being able to live as an artist?
Well, I think I've already told you about the painting of the voluptuous hills and the painting it in front of a whole group at San Francisco State, and which I made the statement that when I painted those particularly rolled hills with all the feminine forms, it was really painting a deep gratitude for not only for being my wife in marriage, but the mother of my children also, that particular painting, and I would explain it as a portrait of Elizabeth Rumsey Sager Norton Brown Strong, not to give them the whole theological background, because she's very much a part of why I became a good contemporary California painter. Mm. Yeah. She'd always want to see what I'd done when I was out and back, often had the reading material, the New Yorker along, and when we had lunch, she would watch what was taking place, and then never heard me at all, was always very much in support. Many times being right along, together, all the way.
You married very young, and then you were a long time before you had your first child. So you had a lot of time to be young together, I think. Is that true?
Yeah, to go to New York together, right after we were married in 1928, and that was when New York was very livable. And our first place we lived was 79th Street, a big park, Hudson River, snow, and come down and make a whole poem out of it. High flights up, I'd paint out of the front window. She'd cook on a little three burner. She had pork roast was out of heaven for supper sometimes. We'd make love with a little inclined ceiling. She got permission to take the old extinct piano and make firewood, because there's a fireplace up there, and put on her mucklicks and practice her violin while I was working for a pastry man selling pastry in New York, $25 a week. That was a great life together all the way. And we used the usual zonite. You never saw such a beautiful thing in your life. You get in the bathtub, the zonite, this terrifically nude, gorgeous figure, and she laughing as I took care of her. We didn't have an unwanted child. We couldn't afford one. Mm-hmm. But when I got the backgrounds at the World's Fair in 1938, about the first week or so I was working on them, $750 a background. I said, for the first time, I got the money. What about this idea? How old are you now? She said, well, I just passed 30, 31. I said, well, you tell me, I read about it, that you're going to have a baby. It's harder for your pelvis to get the child out to wait any longer. Do you want to have a child? She said, well, that night we put the condoms aside and we had our first child. Then we waited 6 years and had the second one. I don't know why so long to wait, because we'd have the pictures taken. Here was Tim, this little miniature thing beside him. At Fly Sugar or Zoo, for instance, with our sister-in-law, Ed's wife, there.
The Fly
there
Sugar.
She goes. Yeah.
Funny you would come right now, because they're just finding about, yeah. I'm just learning about your birth.
Aye, all the details, I imagine.
That's the man with woman with a rake. She turns it into a Chinese landscape, or Japanese.
Ray, how about Ida Geary? Do you have memories of Ida Geary during those years?
Do I have memories of which?
Ida Geary. I'll write it for you. Ida Geary. She was a plant person. She made art from plants.
I don't know who Geary is, but I got very strong. Who is Ida Geary?
Well, she lives in Mill Valley, but perhaps you didn't know her. She's about a little younger than you are, but up there. But Cedric Wright was in Berkeley, was he?
Yeah. He had an old Maybach house just this side of the blind school. Gorgeous.
Mm.
And he had it down in the basement. My whole woodworking outfit.
He was never in Mill Valley, was he?
No, but he was
and mentioned. He came over when Tim was only a few months old. Ansel Adams was a close friend of his, and I wanted a photograph. And he says, well, I'll do it for you if you give me a penny in exchange, which I did. Mm-hmm. So he took Tim sitting in a little rocking chair, a beautiful photograph. And we became very close friends because he had a cabin up at Lake Tahoe, south of Tahoe, and Ed and Gertrude were often giving the whole vacations up there and weekends, and they were great friends, and Cedric and myself became great friends, and Rhea Wright was his wife, and she was quite talented also.
He
did this whole book on
Barbara.
Called Words of the Earth. I showed it to Frank Lloyd Wright's wife, hoping to get a publisher for it. Somehow I never got that, but I left it there with her. I don't know whether it was ever published, but it was a great photograph of meadows and the range of light, but all intimately stuff. Once in a while, a big cumulus one on the east side, but mostly intimate stuff.
Yeah. It was published.
It was published?
Yes. I have a copy of it.
I'll have to get myself a copy.
It must, yeah, Barbara, it's probably on the internet.
Yeah.
Words of the Earth.
I thought that we had it.
Oh, maybe you do. Yeah.
Might still be in Santa Barbara. It might actually be in the studio.
I think you've done a good job on me. Do I get a copy eventually?
Of course. Of course, and
thank you. Gosh, yeah, there's a lot of Caroline in you.
Finished.
Well, Lou, this description of all of the isms of the world, classic.
Good book.
Great book.
Yeah.
It's just a great book.
It's in print again.
Oh, God.
Which is good. Well, tell me, what do you remember about what people like... let's see, there was one person I think we didn't talk about. Let me just check. Don Emmons, Pickle Jones, Sam Newsom. No, I guess we've...
Got the Dimitrovs and the Zimbabwe.
Right. How about Bruce and Jean Coleman? Do you remember them? They lived...
Well, say it again.
Bruce and Jean Coleman.
Let's see.
And John Ludlow. John and Melda Ludlow.
Write them out in night time.
Okay.
Was that the teen that, that did a book for children or not?
No. Oh, this is good. Clement and Edith Hurd. That's the book people.
They were in a little cabin that the O'Hanlons had above the Gravesons in the woods. Yeah. Oh, yes. He used Green's wood as part of his line drawings on a kind of an oriental Chinese landscape sort of stuff. Huh. Very, very good. And she wrote a whole... some books slanted for children with illustrations by Clement. Now, Bruce and Jean Coleman loved them. I can't remember either.
The Ludlows, John Ludlow was a music teacher, piano teacher, and they lived on Cascade Drive.
Hmm. Probably Mops knew him.
And Bruce and Jean lived on, right off of Cornelia, up above Lovell, you know, where Cornelia snakes around.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think I knew him in my mind personally to be any help. Probably Bob's knew him. Well, what made Mill Valley the 40 and 50 is a good place to live? Well, you're practically part of the mountain.
It was also not expensive to live there, was it?
No, to which?
It wasn't expensive to live.
No. It was intimate. The little stream just flowed right down off the mountain. Right behind the grocery store. That was good because it was inexpensive. I think most of the artists pretty much kept to themselves. I don't remember getting together much. We supported each other's work by seeing it whenever it was exhibited. And the main exhibit was Strawbridge's. I had a show there more than once up above its books.
Oh, you mean in the upstairs from the place where...
In Strawbridge's. Women's Garments. I never had a show there, but... I saw other shows there.
What do you remember about the train, the freight train that came into Mill Valley all the way to the depot?
No, I've seen photographs of it. I've seen photographs that parked of the place where they added an extra locomotives to get to the top. I can see it. I never walked it, but I knew where it was. You could see it, that horizontal place. And the person who helped me build the house was my dad, not my brother. Number 5.
Yes.
Father came down. We stayed at the Chestnuts together. I didn't participate with O'Hanlon's on any projects. except that one concrete support of that wall. Musicians associated, but that was largely quartets with Betty in our living room. I think mostly in Mill Valley, but artists pretty much kept to themselves, except when they had some show downtown one place or another.
Who were some of the people who bought your paintings in Mill Valley?
The Wheelwrights, number one. Then there's a sister, number two, that lived up on a little house someplace close to the high school. Most important, your mother and Lou. They railed fence on the back road out of Nicasio, but it was just a dirt road. Yeah, it's a good one.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ray, you also would loan paintings so that people could decide if they wanted to buy it. Is that right?
No, what's this?
You would lend paintings so that my parents could look at it for a while to see if they wanted to buy it.
I was the originator in the Art Students League in San Francisco of a rental gallery. The person could rent for 1 to 3 months. Generally they would take it for 3 months. The full amount the rental would apply to purchase if they decided they wanted, after being living with it, to buy it. And I think historically Betty ran this out of the, not so much at home, but out of the Art Students League in San Francisco. I don't think we rented very many, but anyhow we inaugurated the idea of living with it. I was told by somebody high up in San Francisco at the Legion of Honor or someplace, he said it was the finest way to market paintings by association that he'd ever heard of. Now, I don't know how its life was elsewhere in the state.
It was wonderful to live with your paintings. There was one they did not buy, but I still remember it hanging in the living room. It was a pool, a river pool. And it had there was a little beach, very small beach, and some low cliffs, and this beautiful blue-green water. I still remember that one, with a little orange in the water, you know, a little...
Yeah. Sounded like it might have been up on a little cove on Tomales Bay.
I think it was a square painting. It was.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was about...
Oh, I don't remember that one.
That. Can you think of anything that I forgot to ask? Something I didn't ask that I should have asked you?
If you ever want to have some paintings for our show, she has a fine collection up at Napa.
John Adams gave me his mother's phone number. Yeah. Well,
this is yours.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yep, okay.
Thank you, Ray.
Well, thank you. Lovely. Just lovely. Fine, thank you.
I have a present for you. I brought you a gift.
Look at that. I got up to the first platform with Barb. Oh. That's wonderful. Oh, look at that. There's the cat. Where's the cat here? Ha! Did you pick it up over there?
No, I did. These are my, it's my book. I showed you these drawings when we were in, at the mulch show.
Oh, yes. Oh, I remember. Look at here. I gotta get something together for malt for this year. Maybe the Point Reyes Seashore. Oh, these are. Oh, there's Betty and the fiddle.
Yes.
Bass fiddle.
Fiddling. I'm giving Ray the book, my book that was just published.
Lovely gift, thank you. Oh, my.
What is it?
Very contemporary.
It's a children's book.
Oh, wonderful.
Lovely gift. Thank you.
Did you illustrate it, too?
Yes. Yeah.
They dance with brilliant stars. Ooh. Wow, vanishing point.
Yeah, one of my few vanishing points.